Welcome to Turn a Page, the official comic book club for Nerd Initiative. Each week, the NI Bullpen will be covering the world of comics, talking to creators, deep diving into some fantastic stories, and much more. Now let's hand it over to the team and turn a page.
And what is going on, everyone? It is Tuesday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you are tuned into Nerd Initiative YouTube and streaming services for another edition of Turn a Page, the official comic book club for Nerd Initiative. My name is Ken M. You know me as the host of the ODPH podcast, but I'm also Nerd Initiative's comics editor-in-chief. To my left, your right, he has to do his own intro because it's in his contract.
Coming at you live and direct and full screen from the ODPH studios. My name's Off the Cuff Tom, Nerd Initiative's pop culture connoisseur. Ken, no other names mentioned. It's always a pleasure.
Absolutely. It is just us rocking the show tonight. Our usual cast of bullpen members unfortunately can't make it today, so definitely shout out to Matt and Lauren for this, because as we were going into this episode, this is arguably the biggest new comic book day of the year thus far.
Huge.
And I know that we always say it's a stacked lineup each and every week, and honestly, if you're not down at the comic shops, you're missing out on a ton.
Dude, but what did the guy in the chair say? The guy in the chair said that we are literally, so you got to stay tuned all the way to the end for what our picks are. We're not even mentioning the big two this week. It is that stacked. Like, the big two are the big two in the back.
Yeah. That is how crazy this week is at the comic shops. And we have been trying to hype up what we feel that you need to go pick up this week. Because that's what we do, as you see the QR code on the screen, because we love QR codes here at Nerd Initiative. Every Wednesday, starting at 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, the bullpen is dropping reviews left and right of the best picks of the week. And this week literally is an all-star lineup, if you will.
No, like, all-stars from one of those big two. We're not doing all-star.
Right. No, this is definitely the creme de la creme, so to speak. There's so much great books to pick up this week. And Nerd Initiative has been leading the way about showing you what to pick up this week. We kicked off yesterday with an interview with Stephanie Phillips talking about the return of Grimm by Boom Studios. The episode is out in podcast form on odphpodcast.com and on Nerd Initiative YouTube, so you definitely want to go check it out. As you can see, the cover is up on the screen right now and is well worth your time to go pick up, as well as tomorrow, April 3rd, is officially Ghost Machine Day.
It has arrived! It has arrived!
Yes, where pop culture's newest imprint is making a big splash with three books debuting, Geiger, Rook Exodus, and Redcoat. And also in the mix is the next chapter of the Adventures in Twilight City. That is, we had the pleasure of talking to Patton Oswalt, Jordan Blum, and Scott Hepburn about, and that is Minor Threats, The Fastest Way Down. Number one is coming out at the comic shops this week, too. So, like we say, right there off the bat, five books you absolutely need to have in your collection.
Five.
Yeah.
Five.
And we haven't even deep dived into the rest of the lineup coming out, which is why you'll have to go over to nerdinitiative.com starting at 9 a.m. Wednesday morning and make sure you have that button saved, subscribe, and don't miss any of the reviews dropping, because we have a loaded lineup coming that day too as well.
Loaded like a potato.
Speaking of nerdinitiative.com, definitely make sure to swing on over there. Sign up for what is going on in the land of pop culture positivity. Newsletters coming out, and there's a big 2024 on the way. Changes are happening, folks, and it's an exciting time to be a part of the Nerd Initiative movement that has taken place.
What a time to be alive.
Yes. And especially if you're watching on YouTube, because there's some exclusive content that is just coming straight to YouTube. So we'll get the homework assignment out of the way right now. As you see on the screen, make sure to click that subscribe button and hit the bell icon for notifications so you don't miss any of the content that is dropping. Because whatever your fandom is, trust us, you have something on the way for you via Nerd Initiative. And tap that like button, because it lets the bosses know that you like the program that you're seeing on the channel, and we'll get more of that on the way for you. It's a win-win situation, wouldn't you say, Tom?
I got exclusive stuff coming to the YouTube channel, too.
This is exactly. That's a little bit of a spoiler right there.
I mean, it'll make you giddy and pink, let me tell you.
Oh. Stay tuned, dot, dot, dot.
Dot, dot, dot.
But as we talked about, it's a stacked lineup at the week, and we have to deep dive into a series that started a whole movement right now. because we talked about The Fastest Way Down is coming out at the shops this week. There's been some announcements happening around the series that we're going to discuss tonight, and that is Minor Threats Volume 1 from Dark Horse Comics. So this has been a series that really got a lot of buzz behind it, really captivated the fan base by storm, and to see about the creators that are now jumping on board and getting involved with this too, like, there is a lot of things to be excited about for this universe, wouldn't you say, Tom?
Patton Oswalt, Jordan Bloom, everybody else. Like, I'm sorry, I'm speechless, I'm bereft. Like, it is, there's so much going on. This is a sleeper. If you have not seen or read this yet, what the heck are you waiting for? Get on this, because tomorrow it's just going to keep going and going and going, and we want you along for the ride.
Absolutely. So for tonight's episode, we're going to be deep diving into Minor Threats Volume 1. So if you haven't seen it by now or read the book, we're going to walk you through it. We are going to be talking spoilers, so you have been forewarned. And definitely, if you're in the chat, super chat, let us know what you think. Talk to us as we're going along with this, because we want this to be as interactive as possible, because that is what New Comic Book Day is all about. So as we kick off, we get a little bit of a flashback sequence of...
You didn't do the spoilers in 3-2-1.
Oh, well, I mean, we haven't deep dived into a spoiler doing 3-2-1, but just for Tom, spoiler talk is happening in 3-2-1. Okay. Tom, talk to me.
Wow. Like, honest to goodness, going into this book, seeing the powerhouse that was coming behind it, I was like, okay, they know what they're doing. They're fans, they're creators. They you know, I want to see what they're going to do. They did. They just did. Like, it's not, oh, wow, they did this, they did that. They just did across the whole board. And the fact that each book, spoiler, you're going to meet a lot of different characters. And for me, as I read it, each book shined on one of them in particular. Kind of like how a good TV show does with an ensemble cast, that eventually during the season, you're going to get that one specific backstory episode. I think they did it smartly. They didn't weigh too heavy on one character or another, but you knew that issue one was one character. Issue two was another. Issue three and issue four. Now, starting at issue one, who do we meet, Ken?
Issue one, we meet the Toy Queen, who is also has a young daughter, psychic, by the name of Playtime. And as we see, they're going through their little adventures in Twilight City, but we fast forward to where we jump in now, and you see that Frankie's life has taken a little bit of a turn, that she is now running a bar.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah. Which, I mean, is a super villain hangout, if you will. And this is something that really kind of threw me off is, I mean, you go from being a kid's sidekick to now you're out of the superhero game or supervillain game, as it would be.
Mm-hmm.
And as she's serving drinks, she's running into quite the plethora of characters.
A motley crew, as it would be.
Absolutely. And this has a wide range of characters, too. So it's not like everybody is all the same. And this, I mean, is so mirrors a little bit like almost like in a bizarro version of like the Batman's rogues.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so when you start seeing some of the characters come through, we get introduced to such characters as Pigeon Pete, Brain Tease, Scapple, and you do see a little cameo of one named Barfly, who I know has got a big future happening with the Minor Threats universe, as it was just recently announced.
Ooh.
So there'll be a lot more of that happening as we go along the way, but Brain Tease is kind of leading there and doing one of his usual supervillain monologues, if you will.
What do you mean? Like, when I read this, I had this very condescending voice going on. I am the great Brain Tease, Insomniac's greatest nemesis and cosmic competitors.
Yes. So, I mean, and I love that kind of comedic role that they put him in.
Yeah.
Like, the writing... Because obviously when you're talking about villainy, you need something kind of cheesy like that. You need something to jump out in that in that aspect.
Gives you a Batman 66 vibe.
Yes, very much so. So when you start seeing that interaction happen, and Frankie is just like, I don't want to say too cool for school here. But
no, her Fs are not given.
No, and she is just kind of brushing away as she comes across Scapple, who, I mean, they have their kind of back and forth as they're going in. And then we start getting introduced to much more of the characters involved. And this is where things really start picking up, because we do see one bust in the door and really kind of throw everybody off, and that's Snake Stalker.
Mm-hmm.
And he's carrying in a body. And at this moment, too, like, the joking is, you know, really gone away. It's really one of those moments that you kind of sit there and go, like, okay, wait, we just went from this comedic aspect into the more serious tone. And we find out that the body in question is another C-list villain, but he has been brutally beaten to almost to death.
To death.
I mean, like I think he dies.
He's hanging
after.
On, but yeah.
Yeah, and who is behind this? The Insomniac.
Wait, isn't he a good guy?
You would think, but apparently something has caused him to snap a little bit. And we do see that the villains are trying to figure out what happened. And sure enough, they go on the news and they find out that his sidekick, Kid Dusk, is killed publicly by the Stick Man.
The Stick Man? You're drawing a real thin line there.
I see what you did there.
Thank you.
But so, and as we see too, I mean, they unfortunately have the sidekick, you know, outside of a helicopter in public view. And every one of the minor threats is no, well, I shouldn't say they're minor threats now, but everybody of the villain group is kind of sitting there going, oh no, like a line has been crossed.
Because the code.
Yeah, break down the code for a little.
So the code is kind of this, you know, relationship that, that the good guys and the bad guys have. It's kind of like Batman doesn't kill idea. You know, it's all for the good of everybody's sake. Mm-hmm. It's the catch and release program. I think they did a good idea of just doing an overview of the code. You're not going to find it like written on the wall. Thou shalt not kill and thou shalt not be a tool. You know, it's the unspoken agreement between everyone.
Mm-hmm. And it's kind of wild to see it. But I mean, we've seen this happen a little bit with the Flash's rogues.
Exactly.
I mean, that's where it's really kind of stuck out to, you know, for me as a reader, that you've really seen that code go through, especially with Captain Cold leading the rogues.
Oh, I love Captain.
I mean, it's really gives that group of villains such an identity, in my mm-hmm. opinion. Because in comparison to, like, Spider-Man's or Batman's, everybody has, like, a little different agenda going on. But the Flash's rogues are pretty much on point here.
Honorable thieves, if you would.
Yeah. And as we see it happen, this really comes into play because, obviously, if you cross the code, things change.
This is a huge F around, and you will find out.
Mm-hmm. So as Frankie and company go out, they find that the searcher for the continuum mm-hmm. has now put out a call for answers.
Searcher gives you what's the actress's name? Captain Phasma vibes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the actress?
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah, because you see that she comes in and she really has made a presence felt too. And being the leader of this group has literally put it out and saying, we want the information where Stickman is. Like, this will not happen. Because the Insomniac, obviously, has taken this very much to heart. Much like when Jason Todd was killed by the Joker. So, with the Searcher really putting out that public cry, this really throws everything off that Twilight City knows about.
Completely.
And seeing this moment play out, I mean, what's going through your head, Tom?
First, I'm trying to get the grasp on, like, the villains, like how, what league or tier are they?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't go in. I went into this not knowing necessarily that, you know, are they A-listers, B-listers, C-listers, D-listers, backups, sidekicks, reserve characters. So the fact that they start here and then all of a sudden the good guys go into this almost injustice police state
mm-hmm.
right in front of everybody, like, as much as, you know, Insomniac has crossed the line, now the good guys have crossed the line. So how is it that these lower tier villains, or I wouldn't even say villains to some degree, if they're that low, I would say ne'er-do-wells,
mm-hmm.
are now like under the microscope. But at the same time, the whole city is. But to see it from this perspective, I'm like, okay, I'm down with this. Let's go. Okay, this is why they're called minor threats.
Yeah.
Because they're just like, they're there. I mean, when you think Batman, you know, what's the first bad guy that comes to your mind?
Joker.
It's not Bookworm, I can tell you that.
Yeah. I mean, it could be, but...
It could be. I mean, he's a good character, but...
Yeah.
You know, 9 out of 10 times, if I say, Spider-Man, who's, you know, what villain comes to mind?
Oh, Green Goblin.
It's not Alistair Smythe.
I would say probably not.
Exactly. So, that's where we're coming from in this book.
Yeah, so that's where you really get this interesting setup here, too, that, like I say, dealing with the C-list characters and they understanding the temp in the room, that one of their own villains has crossed the line and has now endangered not only their code, but their livelihood, because killing a superhero, and especially one that's connected with the Insomniac, mm-hmm. is not going to fly well.
And that the Insomniac, in turn, killed one of their own. Like, this is not a very quid pro quo. That it's not one hand is washing the other. This is everyone's the butthole.
Yeah. I mean, and that's one of the situations you have unfold here, that knowing that this book is not exactly good guy versus bad guy. Like, nope. There's a very gray area about moral code here.
Oh, very much so. And it's not also about the everyman for himself either.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what happens is eventually that all these minor characters, all these ne'er-do-wells, because I'm just going to keep saying that, they come up and do their own little team to figure out what is going on, who killed who, why is Stickman doing this, why is, you know, what is going on with the Insomniac. It is, yeah. So I like a good team up. Everybody likes a good team up. But to do it with, you know, these tiny tier guys, is really fun. It gives you so much opportunity to either build a character or build out a world from someone else's perspective. Mm. I mean, you look at Metropolis from Superman's perspective, it's Metropolis.
Yeah.
But if you look at Metropolis from, say, Steel's perspective, all the way in Suicide Slums, it's a very different view.
Mm-hmm. And then the story kind of does a break here too, because they give 3 weeks before Playtime is getting out of jail. And now going back to the real world and, you know, having a tough time adjusting too, because obviously being a supervillain and, you know, trying to get reacclimated into society, knowing her history is not exactly winning anything over. And then they have a little side story going on with her and her mom. I mean, you want to break this down a little bit, Tom?
Emotional damage. I mean, let's be honest. What was going on is, mom was using the kid's powers like, yes, oh, you're my sidekick, but I'm going to use every single thing you have on the table to thieve and villainy. And you're not my kid. You're my accessory.
Yeah. It's a very strained dynamic, to put it mildly. But as you see, it really kind of folds into Playtime's mindset as she grows older.
Mm-hmm.
And then knowing what she knows a little bit about the Stickman situation, too, is there's a moment where Toy Queen is meeting up with Stickman and a bunch of the other rogues and leaves very quickly. And the only thing that she can say is, Stickman crossed the line.
Oh, very much so.
Yeah. So that kind of will play into a factor later, because as Twilight City is going completely crazy now with everything going on in the Continuum, which is their version of the Justice League, more or less, going through the city looking for the Stickman, you can get the sense that just, you know, the temp in the room has really changed. And it's one that's putting so much pressure on the citizens and the villains in general that it's really throwing everything off that we know about superheroes.
Like I said, police state. Mm-hmm. It gives you those Injustice vibes.
Yeah, no, it definitely does.
It's the one bad day scenario.
Mm-hmm. So then even too, when Frankie is just trying to go back to her normal job, she even gets stopped by a member of the Continuum who's shaking her down for information.
In front of her daughter.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we're already having the emotional, you know, conundrum that's going on between her and her mom. And now it's her and her daughter. And obviously her ex is just like, get the hell away, woman.
Mm-hmm.
So to see that is just almost generational trauma just keeps getting added, you know, it rolls downhill.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So as we see that Frankie just comes to the realization as she goes to the bar that she decides to lead an initiative that when you get to this point in the book, too, it's one that it leaves issue one on a cliffhanger, but it's also one that really changes the mindset of you as the reader going in.
Mm-hmm.
Because Frankie is trying to be good and stay away from the villain life that she left.
The straight and narrow.
Yeah. And now she comes up with the idea, which is a game changer, but it's also a big gamble too.
I got to get back in the game to get back out.
Yeah. And Tom, what does she decide to do?
She gets back in the game. She suits back up and she recruits up the rest of the, you know, lackeys and lugs and everybody in the bar to figure out and find where the heck Stickman is and hold him accountable. I mean, it's not necessarily the enemy of my enemy is my friend, but it's definitely for the good of everyone, both sides, both flips of the coin. We just got to take care of it no matter what.
Yeah, and that's how issue one ends. So when we go jump into issue two, this is where you start seeing the group kind of mesh together a little bit. And we really see them, you know, I don't want to say form as a team, but it's also one that you kind of sit there and go like, all right, how's this all going to play out? So as they go back to Brain Tease's apartment, and this is where he's getting his inspiration because he's saying, well, I can track him down. I can find the stick man. And you see this great image that's up on the screen right now where he's just mentally processing everything that's playing out.
Like it is a poorly drawn version of like what Sherlock thinks or the good doctor. You know, it's the mind. Yeah,
but this is how he uses his powers. And then lo and behold, he does find out where Stickman is.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're seeing this play out, I mean, he looks, you know, like he's just such an absurd D-list villain. But yet when he's focused and wanting to do this, it really gives a little depth to his character, wouldn't you say?
Yep. And again, issue one was Frankie.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Issue two, we're obviously going to be focusing here on our, you know, master tactician here. We're going to get his backstory and everything going on. So I think it's fun. And, you know, the art in here is stunning. I mean, you really just look at this.
Oh, yes.
Just look at it.
Scott Hibbard's artwork in this is just next level.
I couldn't stop looking.
Yeah, it's just the little things like this, too, to just put those details in, it just really elevates everything up, too. So as you see, when he's talking to the group there, I mean, Brainwave is really selling the point about, like, what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then breaking down everything that is going in with their plan, which, I mean, is just, you know, like almost like just insanity to even think about. But there's also this level of distrust that's happening with the group, too.
Oh, yeah.
Because, obviously, with the pressure of the situation that's unfolding, not everybody is trusting everybody. So while there is honor amongst thieves, the question becomes, is there really?
Is there?
Well, that's the situation because you have, you know, Snake and Scapple really getting in each other's faces about what is going on. And it's an interesting play as they're going through because then when you come across U.S. Eagle and as he's shaking down other people, it really kind of gives a point of like who is the hero and who is the villain here.
Oh, absolutely. And then the fact that is, again, with this whole police state going on and the villains are probably more than likely going to, you know, every man for themselves and throw everybody else under the bus.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they can't get anywhere. So what's the best place to hide? In plain sight.
Mm-hmm.
So Pigeon Pete, being an old school guy as it is, was like, well, let's just take the bus because, you know, this is an unsanctioned thing. So that means bus service still works and nobody takes the bus anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very old school, but it does get the job done because when they have to go to the Trophy Room nightclub, this is where things really pick up. And it's a situation that as everything is unfolding, they start making their way through. And you see Stickman is still overseeing everything, but the character that jumps out in this moment is Brain Tease.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think how it comes across to me and chat, super chat, throw your picks in here too. This is a situation that he finally thinks like he's an A-lister. Like he finally thinks like he's on that level.
Yeah. I figured it out. I did it. I did the thing. I got us in the door. I did this. I used my reasonable powers of deduction, and there you go. I'm here. I'm literally in the room where it happens, and you were just luckily got in the door.
Mm-hmm. So sure enough, as they're making their way through the crowd, they run into little obstacles here and there, and we do get a couple flashback sequences of when Kid Dusk came across Brain Tease, and then you see like there's also like this underground fight pit going on that Snake Stalker is involved in. So there is like a little break in the action, but then the moment that happens that shakes everything up is Kid Dusk, his body is coming out in a motorized cart.
Yep.
And this moment draws out the Insomniac, who wastes no time going after everybody in that casino. I should say. And this is a situation that Frankie breaks down perfectly and said, Stickman was not baiting everybody. He was trying to turn this into a feeding frenzy for the Insomniac, so the Insomniac would snap and kill all his rivals.
Yep.
How detailed is this moment?
How devious is this moment that you're taking one of the best heroes in town and turning it into your WMD?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is your, it's your weaponized mass destruction right there. And the best part is it, with the, with Insomniac, it's like, all right, what voice am I hearing? You killed him. You're like it's Batman. Let's be honest.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So it's like, are we Christian Bale? Hey, how you doing, Christian Bale? Oh, Tommy. Or are we Kevin Conroy? I don't know the level of grief that this, well, I understand the level of grief this character is coming through,
mm-hmm.
but where I could hear it in my head, because I mean, let's be honest, we've read so many comics, we've watched so many shows, in our head, we have to have that voice when we read, because I can't read Insomnia and go, oh, Tommy, oh, what did they do? It's not Tom's voice in there. It's got to be, oh, Tommy, oh, no. Heck, for all I know, it could be Diedrich Baker with his Brave and the Bold version, but that ain't going to work.
No, but that's the whole point. Like, you can hear just the anger in the voices. The Insomniac is going around and taking out everybody. So this obviously throws Playtime and everybody in the crew's game off, because they're like, we don't want to deal with this. This is the whole point. We're going after Stickman, trying to eliminate him from the equation.
Mm-hmm.
So they kind of have to make a frantic escape, and they do run into a couple of his henchmen, but sure enough, who finds them? The Insomniac. And this moment, you know, they have to go make a, you know, a crazy dash, but everything is just falling apart here.
He snapped those Stick Boys.
Oh, yeah, completely. So as, you know, with the Insomniac in pursuit, you see Frankie's trying to make an escape and winds up getting shot in the shoulder.
Yep.
And does this dramatic fall off the building. I mean, that's how the issue 2 ends, which is insane to think about.
And let's take 2 seconds, because I think you can really appreciate Frankie's costume at this point,
mm-hmm.
Knowing that they're going with this whole toy motif. I mean, the Rubik's Cube bag.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the belt buckle. The Nintendo controller belt buckle. I wanted to see that being used more often, let's just say, because I was an old Captain N, the Game Master fan back in the 80s, you know, mega. So to see that, I was like, yes, this is so much fun. But we can talk about costuming and the characters, because I really do want to talk about that later. Like, where did we get ideas from these other characters from?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you can definitely see the influences happening here. And I mean, this Hepburn's vision when he's creating these costumes for the characters. Like, we talked about this on the interview when we had with the team.
And yeah. The great interview at that. Fantastic. It was really, really fun, Ken.
It was. That's why you should go check it out, Tom.
Again.
Tom's still not over it, folks. A little inside baseball. He unfortunately couldn't make that interview.
I have work.
Yes. But speaking of work, we have to get to issue number 3.
Okay, let's keep working.
And this is a situation that we're seeing, obviously, the fallout going in. We do get a little more of a background going on, too, with, you know, Scapel there as well. And we see, obviously, with Frankie being hurt, she has to be the one to kind of heal her up a little bit.
Doctor, lawyer. Yeah.
So when they have to wind up actually take Frankie somewhere to go get healed,
mm-hmm.
where do they go?
They go to the clinic.
Mm-hmm. And of course, her mom has to be involved in this.
Why you hurt my baby? What the hell? Oh, and also her saving herself, her fall.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was total Goonies Data vibes. Like, Super Six Shoes. No, we got like Marshmallow Puff landing gear. I'm like, that's awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Again, going with the jovial child motif.
But it plays into such a factor, too, that we see, you know, Scapel doing it. And two, just even the image, unfortunately, didn't get a chance to get this on screen, doing the 3D version. I mean.
Okay. I'm somebody that watches The Good Doctor. I don't know if you've ever watched it.
No.
Okay. So the kid on that show has savant. He's autistic and savant. So he can remember a lot of things. And what he'll do is he breaks down and he'll figure out, and he sees things in 3D and puts things together. But this is really good, especially how they portrayed this on the panel. I mean, this was a full page spread, but what was even better is that if you take a look in the arteries and in the muscle structure, the words for exactly what they are or what her game plan or what she's thinking come out. And it's not just on this panel, it's for every single panel. And I mean, anatomically, this is gorgeous. Like, mm-hmm. it is something honestly, if I would put this up in my own, you know, little room, I probably would black out the background just to make it pop even more. Like black, like I would fill in the white just to make it pop.
Yeah. Pow. No, it's just another ingenious piece of art that Hepburn does for this.
Wow.
Like I say, just the art in this book, like, is so good. Like, we can't even put it into perspective just of how detailed it is and just how imaginative the ideas are that run through this. Because, like I say, a simple moment where you're sitting there dissecting a wound turns into this 3D image that just really stands out, and you're just like...
Literally dissecting.
Yeah, literally blown away. But as we start seeing, there is still more tension going on, because obviously... If Frankie had been killed, that would throw the entire plan off.
Mm-hmm.
So Scapel is working to save her. And at this point, too, there's rumor of a traitor that's lurking amongst the midst.
Yes.
So somebody else is breaking the code. And Scapel has had this very standoffish partnership here with Snake Stalker that she is determined to prove the snake is the mole.
What a twist, because of his backstory.
Yeah, which, break that down.
He was one of the former stick boys.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So you've already got an in with the stick man. All right. You are the mole, aren't you? Aren't you? It's just one good stab in the carotid, I'm telling you. And that's all I need.
Yeah. So when they start going back in to their plan of attack, they do wind up trying to track down somebody else that might know something about him.
Mm-hmm. The Thread King.
And that's the Thread King. So as they're scouring Twilight City, the group at this stage, too, Brain Tease, Playtime, Snake Stalker, and Pigeon Pete, are now confronting, and Scapel, too, are confronting the Thread King, and they're demanding information. And he's not really taking them seriously.
No.
I mean, this is another thing. The C-listers are calling the shots. How is everybody else reacting to this? And as you're seeing this all transpire and play out, is really throwing everything in a mix here. Because he just literally laughs in their face. But during this time, too, it's enough of a distraction that somebody has picked up on where they are. And that is who?
It's the Searcher.
Yep. The most powerful hero in Twilight City has now shown up again and is demanding answers and literally starts, you know, going after the Minor Threads team, because obviously they know something's going on. And this winds up turning into an interesting chase, to say the least, because they wind up going to Broken Time Boulevard.
Yep.
So, Tom, when you're watching this in full, too, I mean, how would you describe Broken Time?
I think that if there was one artist that would remind me of this, if they were still alive today, this is some Jack Kirby stuff.
Mm.
It's a low-key Jack Kirby feeling. Like, I'm not saying it's straight-up Doctor Strange going into the Dark Dimension, but... If anybody nowadays outside of, you know, who we got in this book could draw this, I would definitely see Jack King Kirby do something like this.
Oh, completely. Like, this is something that is esque in the storytelling. So the group has to make their way through this bubble, and it literally is basically the multiverse meets, you know, gravity meets, like, just so many different elements are involved. And you do see a couple flash forwards of different time periods. You do see one that stands out, and that's Frankie's mom standing over her grave.
Yep.
Which is very, very interesting to see how this works.
Mm-hmm.
Because you also see one, the Searcher is killed or turned into a zombie and the skin is peeling off. So, I mean, time is not, you know, actually perfect, but it's one area that I thought they really played up well. I thought that Blum and Oswald really kind of took some chances here.
I think they really played on the whole wibbly-wobbly stuff. You know, it's mm-hmm. more like a rug, but never mind.
Yeah, no, I think so, too. I think that they really kind of had some fun with the whole multiverse and different timelines.
And also, just redrawing the Searcher in the same panel three different ways from three different perspectives, I thought that was really just them having so much fun. Like, okay, we have the infinite possibility. Let's just throw everything at it and see what happens. And it worked.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it worked to the T. So as we see, the Searcher is trapped in the slow-mo time period,
mm-hmm.
which gives Frankie and company enough time to get away. And doing this, they wind up shaking down the Thread King, because he said, if you can get me out of this, I'll tell you whatever you want. And he almost tries backing out of the deal, but then Scalpel does what she does best. And she winds up extracting the information. Meanwhile, they're in a diner, too. And you do see that, you know, she's not one to, you know, waste time. And as the other patrons are eating there, especially Brainteez and Snake, Pigeon Pete, you're hearing the screaming going on from the Thread King.
Well, she's direct. She's to the point.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
I just got to ask one other thing. What is up with this cat? The long-tailed white cat? It is in several pages. I want to know what's up with the cat. If everybody knows by now, if I find a pet or something that's adorable, I'm going to follow it. Is this my rabbit hole? I'm just saying, like, I don't know what's coming out, you know, with the new series, but that cat better be back. I don't care.
We'll have to find out, though.
It needs to be there.
Yeah. But this is a situation that, you know, after a quick flashback, they get a little more information about where they're going to. And once they track down where the stick man is, he's actually at the Cloud Street paper mill.
Mm-hmm.
So this is kind of an interesting setup because he's actually given the right information. They wind up going there. And then sure enough, in the mix, they find out that, yeah, they have been set up.
Yep.
Because he's waiting there, but this has all been a trap the entire time.
Mm-hmm. And one other thing that I also love, the fact that how often do we get villains in any mass media that it's kind of cliche where they're... hideouts are.
Mm-hmm.
So the stick man, where's the only place you're going to find a stick man? On a piece of paper.
Yeah.
Thus, his base is a paper mill.
Mm-hmm. And it works out perfectly. And then we go right to the cover of issue 4.
Oh.
And this, like I say, this is just one moment too, that when you see this image pop up, I mean, this is like, you want to talk about an issue cover that grabs you. For me, I mean, this speaks volumes about where we've gone with the series thus far.
Especially coming off of issue 3, like the cover on issue 3 had this fun, campy kind of vibe with all these little tiny, immature baby versions of the characters. Thank you, guy in the chair.
Mm-hmm.
And then we flip it to this maniacal stuff in the vast darkness of the stick man's costume, just to like, all right, we're here. Here's the scary part.
And go.
Front page.
Mm-hmm. So it is interesting to see how it's set up. But like once you see that cover, you know the end is here. And then you start getting a little more information about Pigeon Pete. And just like his background too. And you see like that quick like throwback image too. You know, which I love how they did this with the coloring too.
Like, can you tell me some Nightwing vibes there?
A little bit.
A little bit.
Yeah. So when you start seeing, especially with the one... victim with the crystal egg.
Faberge
egg cracked over his head, too. Like I say, it's one of those situations that when you see this image show up, it really sets a tempo like, okay, Pigeon Pete has always been a low-level villain, but to see this, and especially like this moment play out, like it's a graphic one that just really catches you and really says like, okay, this is no joke. Like what you're doing is wrong and there's serious consequences for crossing. So it is interesting to see how this all shapes. So then when the stick man is, going through and basically torturing the minor threats team.
Yeah.
You see, obviously a lot of is happening here. The brainwave's taken out and then the master plan is revealed. I mean, after Pigeon Pete is revealed to be the traitor, he's not revealed at this moment, but nope. They kind of alluded to it by giving him that flashback at the beginning.
Well, I think that this was his issue. Again, out of all the minor threats, we had 5 characters, right? And Snake Dude was pretty much a cut and dry black and white character. So did we really need a backstory for him? So again, it was Pigeon Pete's time. One of my favorite things, and we'll talk about that later, is how during the backstories, they did something really, really smart. But yeah.
Yeah. No, I agree with you too. I mean, I think that's one thing that they really made sure to jump out and really go with. I say all these backstories really kind of played into it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see, like I say, it's right here on the screen too. You have that throwback moment. And especially how they did this too with the coloring. I just want to kind of bring that out as well. Like they really made a point to establish that with these times, like how the criminals have evolved too.
I think it's not only that, but if you look at that one particular panel, the throwback panel, It's three full panels. The first two are all happy-go-lucky. Yeah, I'm a villain. I'm doing creepy stuff. I'm doing sneaky, sneaky stuff. Yeah, I'm having fun. Little bit of petty larceny, breaking in. And then
death.
Like, yeah. The colors just completely shift there, too. And it gives you that. It's like, okay, have fun.
Death.
Yeah. No, as I said, Ian Herring, who did the coloring on this, I mean, absolutely knocked out of the park as well, too. So then we start going into, you know, what happens with Pigeon Pete and the reveal that is going on, you know, with this whole scenario. Because now you're seeing the Stickman's whole vision playing out, too. And then to see how this goes forward, it's, you know, really interesting to see just like the master villain reveal. Because, I mean, we've always been used to these villains doing like these crazy monologues and such.
Yep.
And this is where you're seeing, too, because he's taking care of everybody out. You're seeing this body count that's happening all over the place, too. That the Stickman just has everybody's control there too. And especially that scene with Brain Tease, that he's more or less putting, you know, the nanobite bomb, so to speak, in their heads. You know, very reminiscent a little bit to Suicide Squad.
A little Waller-esque.
Yeah, a little Waller-esque, but it plays out to where it needs to. And then when you see this go down, like, this is a situation that really kind of amps up things to where it needs to. And then, like I say, you see the master plan is coming into place. Because Stickman knows exactly what he wants to do. And then when you have Sideswipe decide to lead everybody into the Dream Cavern.
Mm-hmm.
So his plan is, I'm going to have you guys go in and take out the Insomniac at his own base.
Yep.
How ingenious is this?
I mean, it worked for Mirror Master. Well, he got in the place, let's be honest.
Yeah.
But... embolden, I mean, brazen, flippant, other words from a thesaurus.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just freaking smart. Like, we've really, the whole book has just been so just smartly done. And, you know, some of them are obvious tropes that we've seen in the past, but done in such a unique perspective and done also with a different type of timing that you didn't see the next thing coming, but you knew what it was when you got there. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Because as you see, they go into the cave there, and they almost have their own play going on too, but the Insomniac has, obviously, if you're going to go into his home base, he has something lined up.
There's no Big Penny.
Right. But as everybody sneaks through the portal, Sideswipe is caught in the middle of it, and he's actually cut in half.
And that was so much fun. Like, it made me think of Blink was the character I was thinking of, you know.
From X-Men.
From X-Men. But the fact that Sideswipe has to concentrate to keep these portals open.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess he only did it halfway.
Right. So as you see it play out, I mean, obviously, Frankie understands what's going on. But she's actually come up with a little plan to take care of the backup bomb that was implanted by releasing the jacks, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody has their bombs released, and then this is when the big reveal happens. Like I say, I might have already tipped it off a little bit with Pigeon Pete, but it was like at this point too, when you see that intro go down, like this is where I instantly go, yeah, he's got to be the traitor because nobody's suspecting him. And sure enough, this is when he pulls the gun out on Frankie and says, yep, like Stickman is going to lead us to where we need to go. He's all in. And you really kind of see the ultimate C-lister really think it's his time finally. And this is a really interesting play because he's always been the voice of reason here, but this was done so well, like the Usual Suspects movie.
Yeah.
They're like, you didn't suspect him at all.
Who is Kaiser Soze?
Yeah. And it turns out Pigeon Pete, but this is where the fight breaks out. And this is where you see Stickman is trying to kill Frankie. And then there's like that weird loyalty moment that happens here because he won't do it. But as soon as you see the Stickman start attacking Frankie, this is where you see Pigeon Pete kind of sway, and he jumps into the Insomniac Mobile?
I don't know. Normally, Insomniacs don't drive for safety reasons.
Right. So there's a car there.
Yeah. I could probably come up with some pun for it, but I just wanted to, you know, be, you know, medicinal for a second.
Sure. But as we see, Pigeon Pete sneaks into the car and takes out the Stickman. So it's like a weird dynamic here because he's so on board, but yet he sees what Stickman is doing and just how he's ultimately hurting the people that have been loyal to him, that he has a change of heart instantly.
I think he was sick and tired of being sick and tired, so he went with the stick man. But then when he saw what the new evolution would be, he's like, there's a line even where the line can get pushed. And honestly, stick man just went right over it.
Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to do the many lines. That was not an intent pun.
No, but it's the truth, though. And this is where it kind of ties back to when Toy Queen was saying about how Stickman would cross a line. You see this happen here, and now you see Pigeon Pete sees this in his own right. So he winds up ramming the car into Stickman.
He erased him.
Yeah, so killing himself in the process. And then you see that even Stickman is still surviving this somehow, and Frankie picks up the hammer and hits him right in the head with a killing Stickman. So their problem is, so to speak, done, but it's really not. Because suddenly, who shows up?
The Insomniac.
Uh-huh, and he's not exactly happy to see visitors in his house. But more importantly, too, and in chat, Super Chat, I'm very curious your thoughts about this. He's more mad that somebody else killed Stickman instead of him.
This is exactly what would happen with Nightwing. Think about it. You know, the Falcone family gets you know, unalived.
Mm-hmm.
And where does Dick take out his aggression? He can't. I mean, so this is what the Insomniac's going to the umpth degree, if you think about it. And, you know, the whole idea, and one thing that I picked up on this, is that I took out of it, I should say, is that you stole this from me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, they're literal petty thieves. They not only did they just steal that one little thing, they stole a whole moment from you. They literally ripped a piece out of the Insomniac to the point that it is the one bad day scenario.
Yeah. And sure enough, this is the moment that causes everything to shift. That you see the hero who was so overcome with grief that he went on a killing spree, is now ready to do it again because his moment was taken from him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of a question, you know, that was just posed in the chat there. It's like, you know, when you talk about revenge, it's like, how does this all shape in play? Like, would you be mad if you couldn't get revenge for yourself? Like, that's the issue you have. Because, I mean, when I saw this, I immediately thought of when the Joker killed Jason Todd originally.
Yeah.
And if Batman couldn't get to the Joker in time and somebody else took him out, like, how would he handle it? Because we saw the rampage he went on in Death in the Family.
Oh, for sure.
So when you see this all go, it's, like, very reminiscent. And it also, you know, teeters, like, on that whole trope that you talked about,
mm-hmm.
the one bad day scenario. So what happens the one bad day that something could happen? It could really make a hero turn into a villain, and that's what you see play out here. And everything goes really sideways from what Frankie had originally planned. So not everything is perfect here. And in, like I say, he loses it that he can't avenge Kid Dusk. And you see the fight for their lives because the Minor Threats team is literally at the disposal of the Insomniac. Snake tries doing what he can do. He gets his neck snapped in the process.
Yep.
And you just see them going more and more. But there is a little piece that was left out.
It was a callback.
It was a subtle callback to Frankie and her mom.
Yep.
And Frankie's mom said that she always lost her boxing gun
mm-hmm.
to the Insomniac that was in his trophy case.
Yep.
And she'd always had wanted it back. During the melee here, the trophy case is broken. Frankie finds the gun and shoots the Insomniac point blank in the face, tearing his head off his body.
Yep.
So,
like, it's not, you know, like cute green arrow punching bag or, you know, boxing glove arrow. Like, this is just, see, you're going to lose your, you're not going to get a black eye. You're just going to lose your head.
Mm-hmm. So once the smoke clears from this, you fast forward a couple days and the news is reporting about the Insomniac's death and Stickman's death. And there's one villain getting all the credit for it. And I love this moment. Tom, who is it?
This was such a great idea that they let Brain Tease run with it
mm-hmm.
because he finally needed his time to shine. I think that, to me, Brain Tease, here's an even more obscure, is the Blue Maharaja.
Okay.
Okay, from Mystery Men.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this was his comeuppance in a good way.
Yeah.
Not in a bad way. So not only did they say, you know, Ernest Thorb live. Police arrest after explosions and apprehended Ernest Thornberry, a.k.a. the Brain Tease, who is claiming sole responsibility. Who else but Brain Trees, the most brilliant criminal mind in Twilight City, could defeat both its finest hero and villain.
Yeah.
News at 11.
It's perfect. It's so perfect.
So perfect.
Yeah. So as it plays out, you know, Frankie's mom gets her gun back. It's back in the case. Pigeon Pete is actually not dead, which I was shocked at.
Yeah.
Because by the way it was written, I was like, he's instantly dead. But this is why you got to read the book, folks.
Mm-hmm.
And you see him kind of have that parting shot with Frankie. And Frankie is kind of letting him know a thing or two, shall we say. Wouldn't you agree?
I would say you out.
Yeah. That basically you broke the code. Leave town.
Mm-hmm.
Putting it mildly.
Yeah, he got burned. He got burned.
Mm-hmm. He got burned very, very badly. So as they go through, Frankie reunites with her daughter and then goes back to the bar, but she's in costume this time.
Yes.
And this is kind of where things get thrown off a little bit because she's going back and the other costume characters, the villains, if you will, are kind of addressing her and saying, yeah, there's somebody waiting for you. And sure enough, it's U.S. Eagle.
Mm-hmm.
And is in the back, and Frankie is kind of laying a little decree down, Tom, wouldn't you say?
We run this town.
Yeah. That basically she says, yeah, we're now running this town, and we're sending a message. And he's like, well, what's the message? And she pulls out the gun, and that's how the book ends. Brilliant stuff.
And I like that it's a smaller version of her mom's gun.
Yeah. Yeah, like, it is literally such a subtle way to end, but it's one that ushers in the new era because sure enough, this is what you get. And it plays perfectly into the story because you've now seen the rise of these C-list villains into something more than.
And I wouldn't even say that they went A-tier. I think that they haven't skewed from the chain. They've just started their whole own capacity, their own column at this point.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. I think that's a situation that you have that comes into play here, that they now have gone, they've risen into this, you know, new plateau.
Echelon. And that's what, yeah, I was looking for.
And literally for what they've done now is for being these forgotten villains, they've taken care of the quote unquote great heroes.
Mm-hmm.
What a twist on the play.
What a twist indeed.
So, I mean, there's so much good that we can talk about it with this. I mean, looking back on it now, I mean, I think the writing is so sharp.
The writing is not only sharp, but one thing I wanted to talk about when it came to the villains' backstories, the monologuing.
Yes.
The monologuing was so well done and timed out with the panels, with everything that was going on. Scalpel was one of my absolute favorites.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, Snake Dude, again, he was a flash in the pan, so I'm glad we just didn't get a backstory on him.
No, I don't think we needed one for him. I think we got the big ones we needed to when you start breaking it down. Brain Tease, we needed one. I mean, obviously, he fills in that, comedic role, so to speak. But there's also some seriousness to him. Like, mm-hmm, he's the ultimate loser that finally wins.
I'm saying he's Mr. Blue, not necessarily leader. Mm-hmm. He's Mr. Blue, bookworm, rolled into one.
I could definitely see that.
You know?
Yeah.
Now, Frankie, where did we get the idea? Like, what do you think that was an amalgam of where they came up with some ideas? Like, they cherry-picked parts from other characters and put it in. A toy man, absolutely.
Oh, toy man, definitely a little prankster.
Yep.
But even to a degree, Joker.
Really?
Well, you have to think about it in this perspective.
Okay, hit me.
To do the plan that she was going to do, it is an insane one. Right off the gate, you have Stickman, who has caused fear in the villain community. As far as we know from the time he's been connected, like from that moment that you saw Toy Queen taking Frankie away and storming off, like he crossed the line. So you know that he's like the worst of the worst.
Mm-hmm.
And yet her plan is to go and kill him immediately. Like that's how she comes. She's like, yep, if we take him off the board, it's done. And this plan with the team that she has together, if you can call them a team, has no chance to do this. And yet she systematically breaks it down to go there. And to think about everything they're fighting against,
mm-hmm.
like they have no chance to win. But yet she's so smart about it that she realizes, okay, if I take him off the board, where does that put me? And it's such a detailed, ingenious plan when they do this breakdown.
Yeah. I never thought of it that way. Yeah. That's why I like doing this.
Yeah, that she does this and that she understands, like, okay, if I take Insomniac off the board too,
mm-hmm.
which, I mean, just happens to happen. But if you obviously in that time period, you got to make a call. Could they have won that fight without killing him? It's a question. I don't think so.
No, they would have to, you know, quote unquote, break the bat at that point. But because, again, Snake Dude was just...
Yeah, so they had to unalive him.
Mm-hmm.
So in that situation, they had to go to take it to a different level.
Yep.
But she knew immediately with Brain Tease taking the fall, she could still take over in that power vacuum.
I don't, you know what? And I think it was another thing that I think in the villain community, they got their respect. And the way that everything was reported with the, you know, end of the Insomniac, that I don't think the hero community got wind of exactly how it went down.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's just my theory there. So when US Eagle is like, well, who are you guys? Huh?
America. Yeah.
You know, I think that was really smart. Now, if they keep it low key with the new books coming out, I think that's just fun. And it opens up the world for great writing.
Oh, absolutely. I think the writing, like I said, is so sharp in this. Mm-hmm. And I think it's so detailed. And not every villain is, you know, or not every character, I should say, is so cut and dry.
And to do that in 4 issues.
Yeah.
Says so much.
Oh, absolutely. I think that says so much. I think the art in this spoke volumes to the design of Twilight City. I mean, we didn't talk about the kaiju that was killed, that was left in the city. The Continuum just didn't want to move, so they just had built around it.
Which, decay and everything. But that's where my mind went. It's like, well, why isn't it like dead and decaying?
It's a perfect...
You can't build on something.
It's
like
a perfect setup for an imperfect world. Mm-hmm. And this is where it really jumps into play. So, I mean, that's like a lot of the good things we liked about it. Was there anything you didn't like about this?
I would have liked maybe another issue. Maybe. But I didn't need it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they did so... The guys did so well in one issue to bring everything together. Maybe to stretch it out a little bit would be nice. But again, not necessarily. I really don't think I found anything bad about this. Glaringly bad? No. You know, little nitpicks? Again, I think that the going back to Frankie's mom's house was kind of a cheap shot. I don't think we really needed it. That whole scene could have been a phone call.
Mm-hmm.
Think about it. That's 3 pages could have been just a... Not... Yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I mean, that could have been shortened up if so. But like I say, I couldn't really find too much that I had fault with this. Mm. Maybe the only thing I would say...
And we're pushing it. We're trying to find something.
Yeah,
folks.
To be honest with you. Like, the only thing is maybe a little more time with the Continuum. Like, other members.
We got more books coming.
But that's the whole thing. So, knowing what we had now, I think it worked perfectly. Because this whole story was to establish Frankie.
It has teed it up.
Mm-hmm. And then now, where we're going with the new series that starts tomorrow is anybody's guess. But mm-hmm. we've heard about the spinoffs coming. And like I say, the alternates is a side book that is already out now that you can go check out via Dark Horse Comics. Like I say, there's a lot of big things happening with this. But this book coming out, as our guy in the chair has put on the screen right now, is one that really kind of says it all. if you've read this series, you can obviously tell an idea of what maybe is to come. And I say, I love this cover too. It's one that just really pops.
Speaking of covers, one thing I absolutely freaking loved about this, if you go back and look at issues 1, 2, 3, and 4, and I believe they were all the A covers, in the top left corner, you got old school Marvel style with the faces.
The letterboxes, you mean?
Yep.
Yeah, if you look at the original covers there for like 1, 2, 3, and 4, yeah, they had the old school letterbox with the faces there. And that's so vintage. I love that too. Like I say, everything they did with this just really was knocking it out of the park. So
it's guys who love comics write comics.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, and like I say, this is one that you can definitely tell with the hype you're hearing now and everything coming out around it, you completely understand why.
Yeah.
So that being said, I mean, obviously we got to put our grades on it. Chat, super chat, throw your grades in this if you read this, or going off our description, like, what do you think you would grade this out of 10? So usually we kick this off with Matt and or Lauren if they were here, but Tom, I'm going to have to defer to you. What is your grade on Minor Threats Volume 1?
Honestly, it's an easy 10. It really is. Like I said, we were trying to find things that are wrong with this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have to opinionate our wrong things and, oh, well, I would have done this. So if we had to push it that far, it's a 10.
To see the world of superheroes really flipped in a 180 and to have characters that are not good nor bad, but just are so multi-layered that every time you meet somebody, it's not so cut and dry.
And it's not necessarily anti-hero or anti-villain. And Gray's even hard on that. I think here's a good way that I was thinking about this. You know, you said takes a 180. So, okay, you're looking at it like this, but you're not. You're looking at it from this angle. You're looking at it up from here. It's sorry if you couldn't hear me when I said, but you're looking at it from a completely different perspective. We always see comic books written in that perfect frame right here or a little kid's perspective, not from the downtrodden, not from the guy, you know, the other person that's not really considered. You know, we might get the undercut, but this is, again, a wholly new perspective on comics. And it's, can I do it? Can I get my one? It's fucking great.
Yeah, no, it really hits the mark because you have such multi-layer characters and such a story that even when you think you know, you don't have any idea until you get to that very end and everything is flipped. But the epilogue is what really drives home the point that you haven't seen a superhero story. You've seen an origin story.
Mm-hmm.
And this is going to be one that as we go through the different volumes moving forward, this has to be on your pull list. This is an easy 10.
Yes.
Easy 10 top to bottom. If you're looking for sharp writing, creative, imaginative panels, and just, you know, the total package coming together, this is well worth your time at the comic shops. And like I say, it's out in trade paperback form right now for volume one. Alternates, you know, is also another spinoff that you definitely want to keep an eye out for. And then especially tomorrow on New Comic Book Day, The Fastest Way Down, number one is dropping. You absolutely cannot miss checking that out and picking up a copy or two or three on the way out the door as well. So that being said, we did mention it's a loaded comic book day for April 3rd.
Mm-hmm.
So, Tom, what are you planning on picking up at the shop?
Comic books.
Oh, I know you are.
Oh, yeah. Which one specifically? Well, we talked to some guys from this new company that's out. You may have heard of them. They're called Ghost Machine. So I know. Oh, well, look, guy in the chair just already put up. Geiger's coming out tomorrow. Rook Exodus is coming out and Red Coat is coming out. And, you know, we're just fortunate enough. We have that wonderful guy. We may have gotten a copy or two physically in our hand a few hours early. So guy in the comic book shop, the local comic book shop, make sure to check the QR code up there, hooked us up. So, I mean, can you believe it? It's here. It's Ghost Machine Day. Yeah. I'm excited. Jeff Johns is excited. How many other people excited? Ken's excited. Yeah.
This has been a moment that we've all been waiting for months. I mean, since New York Comic Con last year, where they really took it over and just really instilled that idea that characters come first and what they have built with every book they have coming out.
6 whole months of anticipation.
Yeah, this is
6.
We've been waiting since, I mean, honestly, since January when we got the big, you know, giant-sized one-shot.
That's true.
And we got a taste of everything that's coming. And trust me, if you're a comic book fan, you definitely want to make sure Ghost Machine is going to be on your pull list. All 3 books are dropping at once. So you definitely want to make sure you're picking those up at the shop. Like we told you, it's a loaded week. I mean, those alone, but I also have to throw in a pick too. This is one of my favorite series that's returning from Boom Studios.
Boom.
I scream about this a lot because for me, this series is more than just a story. It's a vibe. It's like when people talk about Ocean's 11 and just, you know, it's cool. You know, it's a vibe. You know, it's that. This is what I get every time I pick up an issue of Grimm, Stephanie Phillips, Flaviano, Rico Renzi, and Tom Napolitano. Oh, my God. This whole series has been just punk rock, DIY. Do you like I say, it's combining so many different elements. It gives you such a different story and a different perspective on a lot of things going on. And with it coming back for its next arc, I cannot wait to dive into this. This is going to be a series that, you know, I think fans have now been picking up word of mouth, and it needs more attention to it because this is one of the best series put out, bar none. Like I say, it's just, it's a vibe. It's an energy. It's yeah.
And even with word of mouth, it should just stay that. Yeah, man. Hey, have you read Grimm? Yeah. Me too. Yeah.
I mean, seriously, that's how it started, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I mean, the chats that Marty Stoked and I have in the bullpen after an issue comes out, the text thread is incredible. And now more people are jumping in on it.
Yep, I got to mute for an hour.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's the case. So right there alone, five picks to start with. And if you need more picks, because trust us, there is a lot more dropping.
I got two Power Rangers books tomorrow, too. Yeah. I mean, I don't have the things, but I mean, everybody knows I like Rangers, and I'm just going to say it. There you go. There's two new Rangers coming out tomorrow.
Yeah, Godzilla, Mighty Morphin Power Rangers 2,
yep.
Number one by Boom Studios and IDW Publishing,
mm-hmm.
And then obviously new Rangers Academy.
Ranger Academy number 6, it's finally picking up steam.
Yeah, there's so much coming out. Like, honestly, I could sit here and tell you. So I'm just going to save you the time and make sure to check out the QR code at the bottom of the screen. That is what will take you right to the comic book link at nerdinitiative.com starting at 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. There's a couple out today, too, because DC and Comixology originals are out today. So you can get some early reviews going on. But I'm telling you right now, starting at 9 a.m. is going to be dropping every 15 minutes. New reviews coming out of the books you need to pick up.
It is on at 9 o'clock.
Absolutely. And it's going to be going all till midday at least. Mm-hmm. I've already seen the new lineup coming into this stuff, too. Exciting time at the shop, so you definitely want to make sure you go check that out. So that being said, Tom, why don't you tell everybody to find out what's going on with you and the off-the-cuff brand.
You can find me right here on Nerd Initiative every single Tuesday night for Turn a Page. And aside from that, you'll check me out right here on that little QR code because we do love our QR codes. And with everything going on, you'll find links to all the podcasts, links to all my stuff. You'll find even, you know, hey, just to celebrate the small things, you know, I started off originally as a gamer. I finally got another platinum trophy.
Oh,
you know, on the PlayStation. I might not be streaming anymore, but I shared it with the internet because you know what? You got to celebrate those small victories. But again, check the QR code. I'm all over the place and wait to see what's coming up later. Changes are happening. It's going to be more phenomenal.
Absolutely. And for me, you can find me at the QR code you see right on the screen because we love QR codes at odphpodcast.com. A lot of episodes are dropping this week, so we have a lot of fun things in store heading into 2024 that I can't really talk about right now. But you can also check out what is going on with the Comics Bullpen, like we say, 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time is, you know, kicking off on Wednesdays. And more importantly this week, too.
Oh, what else? What else? What else you got?
It is WrestleMania week. And our guy in the chair, is leading the coverage of the biggest showcase of the Immortals taking place in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania this weekend. He'll be having a lot of footage dropping. So if you want to get that started early, because obviously it's WrestleMania week and you want to get as much as you can in, the latest and greatest takes right down the middle. Rich, new guy Nick, and myself will be doing a special edition of Wrestling Night Live this Thursday, 7 p.m.
Starting a whole hour earlier.
Eastern Standard Time. We're going to be live here on Nerd Initiative, breaking down the card, breaking down a little more news that's happened, because obviously there was a very good interview this week that we were going to be deciphering a little bit, and much, much more. So if you want to talk about pro wrestling, that is the spot to be at. And then all through the weekend, too, whether it's comics and whether it's pro wrestling, Nerd Initiative is going to be your stop for pop culture positivity and the latest and greatest in what is going on in those said fandoms. So you got to click on that QR code right now, sign up for the newsletter, sign up, bookmark it on your favorite browser, and don't miss a minute of the content. And because it's in the contract, we also have to say, if you want to get some merch, hey, there's the QR code to go do that. So you want to make sure, if you want to go get some swag, that is the best place to do it. Go support the brand out there. We love seeing it. There's a lot of pictures popping up of people wearing the stuff. So we like seeing that out there. So, and also there's Wrestling Night Live stuff there. I've heard there's Turn of Page stuff there as well. So you definitely want to go get that. Eventually we'll get a Tom shirt there.
I got an idea. I already threw one out in the Discord, man. I'm telling you, I love it.
I mean,
we got to get somebody to hone it, you know, just to, you know, clean it up just a little bit. But I, you know, once we start putting out more of the content that everybody really knows me for, in, you know, from back when at that other place, yeah, it makes complete sense.
It will absolutely make complete sense. But until then, that is why we just say make sure you're following nerdinitiative.com on all your platforms and don't miss a minute of the content. And let's end it like we always do. When you're at the comic shops... Oh, I'm sorry. We got the homework assignment.
Can I do the homework? Yeah. You did the homework. All right. I want to do the homework. All right. Put the thing up, Rich. All right. Make sure that you subscribe. While you're at it, ding the thing, hit that bell. And then, as Uncle Roger says, smack that like button. Our corporate overlords need to know what's going on. Trust me, they're not corporate. I just say that anyway. But seriously, follow along in Nerd Initiative. We want to be part of your life, and we want you to be a part of ours with everything going in pop culture positivity. Now say the thing again.
Well, we say this to everybody that jumped in the chat tonight. Everybody watching on Twitter/X, make sure you drop that subscribe button. Drop those likes. We like to see that here on Nerd Initiative. And before you go to New Comic Book Day.
Or WrestleMania.
You got to stop at the LCS. And when you have a great issue in your hand, such as Minor Threats, The Fastest Way Down. Minor Threats, Geiger, Redcoat, Grimm.
Rook
Exodus. When you see somebody struggling to find a copy, hand yours off to them. Tell them to turn a page. We'll see you next week.
I'm out.